Hi, my name is Kunal, and welcome to the Geeks of the Valley podcast, which connects with some of the brightest minds globally who are leading their respective industries today to discuss the hottest upcoming industry trends and how their work is affecting the global economy. What started off as a coffee chat has now grown into a global platform for visionaries. This morning from Miami, Florida, we have the founder and general partner of Lightning Ventures joining us. Please welcome Mike Jarmusz. Mike, how are you doing this morning?
Miami is awesome. There's just so many people moving there. There's so many companies starting up there. It's just really become an awesome place. And I was pretty dead set on New York forever. And I'm actually really enjoying Miami, and it's a great Bitcoin city as well.
I'm happy to hear that. Let's jump into the first question here, shall we?
Well, let's do it.
So, Mike, tell me about yourself and your background and how it led you to the path of starting Lightning Ventures.
So, yeah, I was in the music business for about 10, a little over, probably over 10 years. And did just about everything you could from the industry side of things, booking shows, touring, tour managing, lights, sound, talent buying, had a little record label in high school. That was really all I wanted to do. And then I moved to New York, and I've always loved investing, and started investing in later stage companies. And went a little nuts with it, as you know, and that was really great, and just learned as much as I could about early stage companies. And somewhere around 2018, I was talking with a friend and showing him some of the things that I was doing, and probably had a good, 50 or so IPOs to date, SPACs, IPOs, direct listings. And he said to me, if you think this is great, you should really get going with the early stuff. And I didn't do the early stuff because I didn't want to lose all my money. But I'm thankful for him, dialed up my deal flow, and then just a whole nother level of education and learning as much as you can. You can learn something from every deal. And that's pretty much what I did. I just became a living, breathing API of all things that are just going on out there. And there's so many cool things, and you just study it as much as you can. And you learn as much as you can, because the numbers can always go up. And so after doing that, I with some friends, decided that investing in Bitcoin companies and contributing and working in that space was really the place that we could actually be impactful, because, there's only so much you can do for, a biotech company that's like making your dog live longer, or, gas stations in outer space, flying cars, being tennis shoes. I mean, whatever it is, I can't really add too much value to that, really, like I can with a Bitcoin company. I'm a late 2012 Bitcoiner. I had a bar in Manhattan. We had the second Bitcoin ATM in New York City. I still have a valid claim with Mt. Gox. I used Charlie Shrem's BitInstant. Not many people can say that. So I have I'm a pretty older Bitcoiner in that regards, and just wanted to do what I could to support the ecosystem. And my love is helping founders and companies and doing this. So for me, it's like a dream job, and that's all I'm doing right now at this point.
And your investment thesis revolves around investing exclusively in Bitcoin companies with a focus on Lightning Network adoption. Why Lightning?
Okay, so in general, people should invest in early stage technology companies and invest small amounts and learn. And that is probably the best way to build like life-changing money and do really cool stuff and it's like a ton of fun. So everyone should do that, right? And that's what I was focused on before, was everything. There were a lot of Bitcoin companies in there, in the deal flow, not as early as I would have liked. I mean, Coinbase in 2013 would have been a great deal to get in. And if that crossed my desk and I was investing in angel investing back then, I probably would have invested in that. And Coinbase looked a lot different back then anyways. But so in some of those companies, there are plenty of Bitcoin companies, but the majority of them are not. Okay. And Lightning Ventures makes it so that we can just focus on Bitcoin companies, because ultimately we do believe that Bitcoin is the only thing that matters and will matter, and that all serious innovation has come out of Bitcoin in the past and will continue to do so. So, you know, anytime something comes in with a, you know, a token, or it's a wrapped Bitcoin or an Ethereum, or even stuff like Stacks or stuff that even touches that stuff, we don't participate. We don't engage, whether it's a even an exchange. That's not something that we're doing through Lightning Ventures. It has a specific Bitcoin focus. And as far as the Lightning Network emphasis and focus goes, that's pretty much where everything is going. That's really the future of Bitcoin. So that's hence the name, and that's hence a big part of the focus. But that doesn't mean that there aren't plenty of good companies out there, and amazing entrepreneurs and founders and people who are working on Bitcoin, but it's not necessarily a Lightning focus. So we're investing in them as well.
So how do you see it as a better alternative than the likes of Polygon, for example?
You're talking about proof of stake, and you're having a whole different kind of discussion. But what it can simplify it down to is that the most secure cryptocurrency that is out there and will continue to be adopted by nation states, by institutions, okay, they are not adopting some joke, other, whatever coin, some other thing. You know, you're going to see, you know, El Salvador, I was there last year. I'm going again in a couple of months here for the conference that they're having down there. In Africa, nations are going to start adopting Bitcoin. Russia is now accepting it in terms of some international settlements. Okay, that is not going to happen with something like a Polygon. That is a whole different deal. Now, okay, but you can say, oh, but with Polygon, oh, my kid has an avatar suit in a video game, and how is that going to trade and whatever's going on? Okay, so maybe you don't need the most secure, okay, algorithms in the world, okay, to secure your kid's sword in a metaverse game. So there's probably going to be plenty of use cases for these other bull nonsense things, okay, but that is not what Bitcoin is after. However, Bitcoin will get to a point, which is about to right now, that's going to have the capability to do all that junk and more, and it's actually on Bitcoin. That is coming, it will come, but when you're the most important asset and innovation in recent human history, perhaps besides the internet, but as far as mankind goes, you know, thousands of years, you can't do these things willy-nilly. This isn't a proof of stake, oh, we're going to fork, whatever happens. Like when you're working on Bitcoin, it's like you're fixing an engine mid-flight, okay? Nothing is done haphazardly. And a lot of people don't think that, oh, it's slow, it's this, it's that. No, it's secure. So that's why I'm all in on Bitcoin.
And I think, you know, it's amazing that you have such a focused investment thesis, but people would ask the question that you're missing out on so much other opportunity in the crypto space. What pushes you away from investing in other non-Bitcoin related crypto, metaverse, NFT opportunities out there?
First off, I'm not interested in any of those things. And I'm not interested in devoting my time to helping those founders. As awesome as they may be, I can't focus on that. You know, all I really care about and can devote my energy to 100% is Bitcoin. It's not necessarily about, you know, finding every great investment. It's more than that. I'm finding great investments in the area that I want to support. You know, that's kind of the focus is you can specialize in one thing. And to be honest with you, personally, I've invested in a lot of that nonsense. Okay. And some of it has done very well. I mean, I wasn't super early, but I invested a very small amount in a syndicate through Dapper Labs, right? I know nothing about it. I mean, as far as it's nonsense, these Ethereum things, but we're talking about a small amount and a small check from my own thesis that I'm working on, and time will tell and we'll see, right? But that's not a Lightning Ventures deal. That's a whole different thing. So I'm in some of those things personally, but I wouldn't recommend them. And if you're playing a trading game with some coins or other things, I mean, God bless you. You can make a lot of money on a good trade, whether it's options in traditional markets or whatever you're trading. You can make money on a trade, but I would just put those profits in Bitcoin, me personally. Look at some of these, you know, quote unquote utility tokens. I mean, they just get taken out to the woodshed and slaughtered. And, you know, it's akin, and it rhymes, some of it, of the tech bubble from years ago. Some of it. It feels that way. It feels frothy. I mean, things that aren't really necessarily a project and raising money in the wrong ways, ICOs and all these other token things. It's not a good way to raise, in my opinion.
You know, earlier in the conversation, you alluded to angel investing, and you've had this amazing track record of investing in over 2,000 deals. How do people get started in angel investing, and what do you owe this success to?
Well, I appreciate you saying success, but you know, time will tell on that. I certainly hope so. And there's certainly some really good markups in there. And we're coming out of a really robust IPO period. So things were great. But you know, those 2,000 deals, that's probably 1,500 unique companies. I should check actually. And probably about 500 or so follow-ons in subsequent rounds. And the worst thing that someone can do, in my opinion, is to take $100,000 and invest $50K in two deals. And then say, oh my gosh, I'm never angel investing again when they both go to zero. Like, it takes years to learn and probably like a lifetime to master. So it's nonstop learning. And I think that the best way to learn is through following really high quality signaling and investing small amounts of money into deals. I think that's really the way to learn. And then reading every update from the founder, learning as much as you can when they dissolve, when they're acquired, when they're acqui-hired, when it's a half stock deal and a half cash deal, when it's a milestone based exit. You know, there's a lot of different things that can happen. So then you just learn in that process, and there's always going to be more opportunities to invest in the future. I don't think it's the only time, you know. Wait for your leaders to emerge. Invest in 30 companies and you will see the ones that start to emerge as the leaders. And then you can invest more in those in future rounds, you know, should you get the opportunity to, but oftentimes you do. So I would find some people that know how to invest, that do angel investing. And I would ask them to, you know, help you get started and turn on some of your deal flow, and even sign up for all the crowdfunding platforms. I'm not saying to invest, but get in the habit of looking at deals. Like get on Republic, Seed Invest, Start Engine, WeFunder. A lot of terrible deals out there too, but just look at everything, you know. Sign up for AngelList and find some really good people. You know, you can join Calcanis's one, the syndicate.com, but just crank up your deal flow so that you're seeing decks on a regular basis from some of the coolest companies that are just being born.
So Mike, that being said, starting as an angel investor or startup fund in the space can be quite daunting, given that the person may have not really established credibility of yet. How do you persuade people to take your money?
Well, that's something that I need to improve on. That's not my forte, is taking people's money. There are people who are really good at fundraising. It's something that I'd like to get better at. We've just raised one fund, and that was a friends and family fund. It's also kind of a no fee, no carry kind of deal. But that, you know, allowed us to get started. And the syndicate is really what I'm focused on as far as building out. And a syndicate is basically just a large group of accomplished folks who are interested in investing in, you know, sometimes there are generalist syndicates that do everything. But in ours, you're just going to get Bitcoin deals and Bitcoin companies. So that's really all that we do. So trying to get, you know, ex-founders from companies and developers and lawyers and people so that when a founder has an update, you can be impactful. You can do something or at least try to, or at least band together with the other people who invested in that company and see if collectively someone may be able to do something. We do our own due diligence and deal memos, and those deals we stand behind. And you're in a high failure industry, which is part of why you should invest in many different companies. Our deals for the syndicate need to fill, and it's like a mini raise every time. Founder comes to you, maybe there's a small allocation and you do the work and put it out there and try to fill that deal and then try to help after. But how to raise funds, you can tell me. And we're getting ready to launch our second fund right now. And I'm about to go through that. So we're going to see what the market's like, which is pretty much all it depends on.
You know, earlier in the call, you spoke about your investment thesis. And can you walk us through this, you know, insane like data model, which you have personally come up with, which is really focused around this micro bet basis and how that performs over time?
Yeah. So if you think about it, when you have a diversified portfolio of early stage companies that have developed at different points in time, it kind of takes on a life of its own in terms of like cash flow and, you know, exits and the timing of it. So to have many different investments looking for those outliers is really going to provide for some serious data afterwards. And that's not only, you know, if you're looking at health and you're looking at healthcare and you're looking at dental, and then you're looking at robotic surgery, okay, or you're looking at dental and you're looking at subscription aligners that you put in, or if you're looking at surgery, you're looking at AR type of virtual reality environments in which surgeons are training to be better. So when you map all of these things out with different subsects of company, of industries, it makes for some really good data. when you can couple that with maybe what other co-investors were investing in, what stage were they? What type of revenue did they have? What ended up happening to them? My hopes is that it creates a really awesome data set. I wouldn't say that it's been created yet. You know, even just some like crude visualizations for stuff. But I think it's going to be rather interesting to see what happens.
So, Mike, given what's been going on in the industry today, how have high startup multiples, which have led to overvaluation, affected the Web 3.0 industry? In addition, can you walk us through what really happened behind the Luna crash, which was one of the leading factors in driving this bear market?
All right. So let's talk about the bear market and let's talk about overvaluations. Yes, everything was way too overheated, way too oversubscribed, record-breaking seed rounds, too much. And I'm happy to see it cool. It's much better and calmer of a raising environment like this. Deals are taking longer. Everything's taking longer to close, especially if you're a frustrated founder right now. They can't close your round, but they are closing. And it's good that it's slowed down. But what else? I mean, look at the NASDAQ, look at the tech stocks, look at everything. There's just been bloodbaths everywhere. Look at Bitcoin. I think the low was 17 and change, maybe 17.5. But, you know, those are big corrections all the way around. It's not just in startup multiples. It's everywhere and everything. And I don't necessarily think that Luna was the catalyst for the Bitcoin sell-off. It probably contributed to it and accelerated it, but it was going to sell off with everything. I mean, everything's selling off. Luna didn't affect NASDAQ on multiple days. It loses more than 5% on multiple days. That's insane action. That had nothing to do with Luna. But, you know, every few years, there's some great scams. There was Mt. Gox, there's Cripsy, there's the exchange hacks. And now we're having this systemic, quote unquote, crypto moment. You know, with 3AC and Luna, Celsius, all of them. So ultimately, Bitcoin will just come out stronger.
And in the industry, what's been interesting, which you just alluded to, is there's so much dry powder which has been deployed into Web3 funds today, but also within the space into startups. How can smaller funds, or basically smaller size funds, compete to win deals?
You can compete with heart and effort and being a brand that other people want to be associated with. You know, we do our best for our founders and we're early in this game. We haven't been doing this for very long as Lightning Ventures, but it's early, and somebody who's just going to be a source of capital and not necessarily there for you. It's great if you need capital. You should definitely have that person on your cap table and take their money. It just depends on what's important to you. If it's important to have a Bitcoin-focused VC who tries his damnedest, then you might find room for someone like us in that deal. And it doesn't even have to be a lot. Even if there's absolutely no room whatsoever, our fund is so small that we can usually sneak into some deals and we make up for our weight in gold, or at least try to. So I think that's how you compete. And in the Bitcoin world, it's kind of a small pool right now. There's a handful of people that are focused specifically in the Bitcoin VC world. Then there's also a slew of other people who are doing Web3 crypto and are not against Bitcoin, but they just haven't necessarily taken the orange pill, so to speak, or they're doing finance deals, payment companies, fintech, and they like Bitcoin. So you can market to those people as well. But in the Bitcoin space, there's no sharp elbows right now. Not really having anyone box you out of a deal in Bitcoin just yet. Maybe that's because we're so early. Maybe that's because it's so small. Maybe when they get to the Series B and beyond level, you know, maybe Sequoia and some of these big people start boxing people out of rounds, but it hasn't really happened yet. So if you're trying your darndest, you should be able to get in that deal.
When it comes to your syndicate, how is it that you're able to compete for deals there? And why should one deal with the syndicate?
You should deal with the syndicate because A, it can be more powerful, in my opinion, than many VCs, family offices, and other people that you can have on your cap table. A lot could come of it. And it's also very fast. And there's also a lot less nonsense and BS to deal with. So why wouldn't an early stage founder who maybe 150 or 250, let's just say $1,000 is incredibly meaningful for where they're at with their business. So before, when things were a little bit healthier of a market, we're very fast and pride ourselves on being fast. And we can turn around sometimes 150 to 250 or so $1,000 to an early stage founder in like 10 days. And that can like really help. It can help with your scaling. Maybe you have a supply chain issue. You need some working capital. You want to hire a dev, whatever it is. So that's a few reasons why I would, if I was a founder, I would absolutely be targeting the syndicates that I know get it. And then I would maybe ask some of their other companies, what's it like working with them, and do a little bit of due diligence on them and what the process was like. And hopefully they all say good things.
Yeah. And to wrap up our call with our last question for the day, what piece of advice would you give to people out there from the journey you've had so far in life?
Well, it sounds corny, but I think I've always been my happiest when whatever I'm working on is just what I love the most in this planet. And then it doesn't even feel like work. I mean, that's how pretty much all the music industry was the entire time. And it didn't feel like work. And that's kind of how this stuff is. You know, it doesn't feel like work. Helping entrepreneurs, filling deals, investing in companies, it has some similarities to the music industry, really. The VC firm is kind of like a label. It's kind of like a record label. And, you know, who you're investing in and who you're helping and who you're supporting. So we wear those with badges of honor. I think when you're a founder, you care also who are those names on your cap table or those logos in the final slide of a deck. I think that you don't necessarily want a Web3 token crypto VC if you're a Bitcoin only company and you are in a Bitcoin only mindset. You know, those people exist and it happens, but it goes both ways as far as who you want on your cap table and who's going to be able to really do something for you.
Fantastic. And Mike, it was a pleasure having you on Geeks of the Valley. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, man.